You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Margie, and welcome to the Desert Island Dishes podcast. This is the podcast where every week I ask my guests to choose their 7 Desert Island dishes. These range from finding out about the dish that most reminds them of their childhood, the best dish they've ever eaten, and of course, the last dish they would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island. I hope you're all well and that you've had a lovely week. I asked on Instagram the other day where everyone was listening to their podcasts, and it's so fun to think that you might be listening to Desert Island Dishes on dog walks or commutes to work or while you're cooking. And that I might even be helping with the housework, which would make my husband laugh. But thank you to everyone who's left a review so far. If you haven't yet left a 5-star review, now's your moment. So I have a lovely episode for you today. Many of you will have seen Gino on TV, but I wonder if you know how he got started and where he came from. I certainly learned a lot, and I just don't think I will ever tire of hearing how people got to where they are today. It goes without saying, there are lots of delicious things in this one, so biscuits or snacks at the ready, let's go. My guest today is Gino De Campo. Born into a large family in Napoli in the south of Italy, he came to London at the age of 19 back in 1995. Gino is often described as the UK's favourite Italian chef. He's a TV regular, a best-selling author, and a successful restaurateur. He has written over 16 cookbooks, holds 6 Guinness World Records, and was crowned King of the Jungle in the 9th series of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. He has over 40 restaurants in the UK. He's currently got 3 television series on our screens at the moment alone, and he's just published a new book, Gino's Italian Adriatic Escape. Welcome, Gino.
Hi, what an introduction is that?
So first off, I have to ask, as we just heard in the introduction, you are the holder of 6 Guinness World Records. What are they for? I'm so intrigued.
One of them is walking on custard.
Walking on custard.
I was the only one who was able to walk on custard. I used to do a show with Melanie Sykes called Let's Do Lunch with Gina Mel.
Yes.
And we filled this bath full of custard, and I actually walked on custard without sinking in.
Oh my goodness. I didn't even know that was possible.
Me neither, to be honest. It's a chemical effect that happens. I got a world record by making chocolate truffle. I got a world record by putting Christmas jumpers on. I mean, seriously, not something that, you know.
Something for the CV.
No, it's something for when you get drunk at night and you don't have anything else to say.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and then you just go through all the stupid things you've done in your life.
So, Gino, you grew up in Naples in a large family, and I know food played an important role early on in your life. So let's jump straight into the first desert island dish. And that's the dish that most reminds you of your childhood.
Oh, when I was a little boy, when my mom used to make a tiramisu, you know, in those days, having a sweet treat, it wasn't something like today. You know, we have chocolate and ice cream every day, you know. I remember when my mom used to make tiramisu, it was one of the best day ever.
Oh, really?
Yes. Because, see, the difference is nowadays when my children want a sweet, you tend to say, okay, only have two or three because you had too many. Tonight, then we're going to have this. When I used to grow up, because we never had sweets or treats, when my mom made a trio tiramisu, we were allowed to eat the lot in one session.
Oh, the dream.
So that reminds me of when I was a little boy.
Yeah, that sounds good. I thought you were maybe going to talk about your grandfather because he used to make amazing gnocchi, didn't he? You credit him for wanting to become a chef.
Yes.
Presumably, I mean, you had a lot of different cousins. Did anyone else go into food or was it just you?
You know, good question. Nobody's ever asked me this question. 68 to 69 cousins. I'm the only one who's actually gone into the food business.
Really?
And my grandfather used to be a chef and he used to have restaurants. The only one who's gone into the food business.
That's so interesting because it sounded like food and your grandfather, that was sort of a really big part of your childhood.
Remember, when I went to the catering college when I was 14, becoming a chef, it wasn't a cool thing to do.
No.
It was the job like everybody hated. You know, long hours, all the holidays, you're going to have to work in the restaurant. I remember when I told my father that I wanted to become a chef, the disappointment in his eyes.
Really?
Yes, because you may as well told him that, for him, it wasn't a job. That for him wasn't a job, but that was for him wasn't a career.
That's so interesting.
You know, and even after when I qualified and I came to England, I went to France to cook, Spain, all the other places. Even then wasn't a cool job to have. You know, you when I used to go to dinner party with my wife, you know, what do you do? Oh, I'm a chef. Yeah, okay. Then he would move on very quick.
Oh, no, really?
So really, what I'm trying to say is only happened about 20 years ago that all of a sudden the cooking, the chefing thing became very popular. Thank you. To only one person, that will be Jamie Oliver. Because it's no point of criticizing this guy all the time.
Yeah.
Everybody does that. That is the easiest way to do it. I, on the other hand, I've always said, well, wait a second, if it wasn't for Jamie, we wouldn't be here because this guy made cooking very cool.
Mm.
And he made me cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he's in a sort of funny way, it's thanks to him.
Yeah. Oh. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
So I read a really honest interview where you describe how your childhood wasn't 100% happy all the time and that there were some difficult times, but from a really young age, you were able to use both food and cooking as an escape. And that seems to be something that you've maintained throughout your life. Would you still say that's true?
Yes. My mom and dad used to have this relationship of, they used to love and hate each other in the space of a minute.
Oh, really? Quite fiery.
Very, very fiery. I've seen a lot of mozzarella balls flying around the kitchen. Actually, that is an image that you will never leave my mind.
Literally,
flying buffalo mozzarella with a glass bowl and the water going everywhere. Yeah, yeah. They were very fiery, you know. They used to love each other to death. And I think that intense love took them to, when they used to fight, they took them to another level of fighting. Never violence, I have to say, but always very dramatic. You know, I've seen aubergine parmigiana flying. I've seen a lot of food flying around my, because they always used to fight in the kitchen.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah,
but it was always the kitchen, the place to fight. So I used to escape from there by cooking. That was my way to escape. Still now, when I have an argument with my wife, which is not very often, the only way I can escape and completely forget about it is for me to go in the kitchen and do something.
That's so nice. Yeah. I think it's amazing, like, the different roles that food can play in your life, and for it to provide you with that kind of comfort is amazing, isn't it?
I find cooking and food one of the most satisfying, relaxing thing ever. When I'm stressed, there is nothing better for me to start to cook a plate of pasta.
Oof, yeah.
You know, everything is better. All of a sudden, everything is good.
Yeah, that's so nice. Let's talk about the second desert island dish. And that's the first dish that you learned to cook.
I remember like it was yesterday, with my grandfather.
Yeah.
About 8 years old, gnocchi, potato dumpling. He used to be great at making that dish. You know, he used to boil the potato, then, you know, flour in there, eggs, salt and pepper. We used to roll them into kind of long sausages and then do all the little pieces for the gnocchi. And we used to make the tomato sauce. My grandfather used to be a great teacher, which is something that I'm not.
Oh, do you think?
No, I see the problem that I have is I think that I do a good job on television.
Yeah.
When I show people the enthusiasm and all of that.
Yeah.
But when I'm actually in the kitchen, especially with children.
Oh.
Right? I don't have enough patience. You used to have a lot of patience.
That is key.
You know, because... you know, I'm like, I already told you that. I forget that they're kids. You know, yeah. I do that with my children.
And was it something when you were cooking with him? Did it come really naturally to you? Did you just get it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I used to love to watch him cook. Yeah. Because for me, it was like creating something. So it was the artistic side of me coming out.
Yeah. And you went to catering college in Naples.
Yes.
At the age of 15.
15, yeah.
Where you trained at the Luigi...
De Medici. Yes.
Catering college, my terrible accent, before working in Nice in France and then ending up in Marbella working as a chef in Sylvester Stallone's restaurant.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that.
I just got a call and I was still in school. The year before, I won the student of the year
at
the catering college. And for the first time ever, I came in the UK to work in Guildford. So the summer after, I got a call. Well, the school got a call to say, "Listen, we know that there is a guy there that, you know, he won all of Italy, the student or cook of the year, whatever you call." And he said, "We would really like to take him to Spain. There is this big restaurant opening. Blah 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 blah. Sylvester Stallone is opening. He wants to do an Italian restaurant. We think he's going to be great to show us how to do some of the Neapolitan southern Italian dishes." That's how it happens.
So cool.
I just got on a flight and I went there for the summer.
And you were still really young.
I was very young. I was 18. I was one of the youngest qualified master chefs in Italy.
That's amazing.
If not the youngest one. Yeah.
Did you get to hang out with Sylvester Stallone?
He came for the opening for 3 days. He came to the kitchen to say hi to everybody and to me. And it was great to meet him. You know, for us, it was an idol with Rocky.
Yeah. Yeah.
And great guy. But the best thing about that summer is I met my wife.
I know. I was going to ask you that because she was working as a waitress.
She was the waitress of the restaurant. Yeah.
And you describe how you literally fell in love with each other in the meat fridge. Is that really how it happened?
Wow. You have done your research. Oh, you spoke to my wife. That is exactly how it happened. They used to keep the butter in the little trays, in the meat fridge. In the meat fridge, we had a section for butter, milks, eggs, and stuff like that. So they used to keep the butter there. And obviously, I used to go in and out to get the meat. So, you know, you meet once, you meet twice, you meet three times. We first kissed in the meat fridge.
Oh, I think
cold.
That's weirdly romantic.
Well, yeah. I can see better places for a first kiss, but that's where it was.
See, when I heard that story, I was picturing you sort of really hot from service, like taking breaks in the fridge to cool down, but it was to get the butter.
Yeah, she went to get the butter. Yeah. I went to get her, I don't know.
Because you say that you also think it's romantic because this is a quote from you. It's easy to fall in love in the sun, but if you manage it in the freezing cold, you've really cracked it.
Absolutely. I think if you can do that in a freezing cold environment, that's me. That is real love.
Yeah, I think so. Let's talk about the third desert island dish. And that's the best dish you've ever eaten.
Oh, well, recently or... in my life.
Ever in your life.
Look, there is one dish that never disappoints me when I go back to when I go back home in Naples. Okay. There is one dish only.
Okay.
And that will be spaghetti vongole with clams.
The best.
Is the simplicity of the dish that talking now to you and thinking about the dish, it makes me want spaghetti vongole.
Yeah.
That's what the dish does to me. It's just simple. You know, a little bit of garlic, a bit of chili, a bit of extra virgin olive oil. You put the clams in there, touch a white wine, the clams opens, get a pasta, put in the sauce, mix everything together on a plate.
So
I mean, that is what Italian food is all about.
Yeah.
Simple.
And do you think, obviously, you can have that over here, but do you think the difference
it's not
is,
the same.
Is it the ingredients?
The clams are not the same.
So it's the ingredients and the setting?
Mainly is the clams.
Okay.
Because you can get the same pasta.
Yeah.
You can get garlic and chili and all of that. You can get good extra virgin olive oil. What you cannot get here is the little clams that you get in the south of Italy, which are very little and they're full of flavor.
Okay, so that's the big
difference. So that is the big difference.
Mm, okay, yeah, I really want to eat that
you
right
like
now.
Clams?
Yes.
Oh, my daughter, she's been eating pasta, spaghetti with clams since she was 2.5.
Really?
She opens the little clams and then she puts them in and she loves it.
So it was because of your wife, I believe, that you ended up moving to the UK.
Yes.
You were just 19 and you started working.
She's the one to blame.
Yeah. You started working at the Orchard restaurant in Hampstead and then at the Cambio restaurant in Surrey. At that time, you were dabbling in different things. You started your business importing Italian products. And it was while you were promoting that business that you were spotted by TV executives and you got your first TV break.
Yes.
Is that how it happened?
Wow. You. Yes, that's how it happened. Wow. You are good.
You feel bad about that.
I feel bad opening, now about the introduction and thinking we keep it. Oh, She's done her work. Orchard Restaurant. Thank you for reminding me that. What a wonderful experience I had there. I worked there for 1 year. Now, I'm going to tell you a story that not many people know. When I worked at the Orchard Restaurant in Belsize Terrace, I also used to be George Michael's private chef for 6 months.
Really?
Yes. Sony Production used to be just around the corner from Belsize Terrace.
And George
used to come to the restaurant pretty much every lunchtime. He was recording an album called Jesus to a Child. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
album?
Of course.
When he had the first time we saw him with the little goatee beard and the shaved hair and the sunglasses.
That is very cool. So basically you had quite a big hand in his album.
I wouldn't say that. No. So what's happened? He used to come to the restaurant and at some point he called the owner of the restaurant, Mario. His name was Mario. He called the owner of the restaurant and said, look, I can't come all the time to the restaurant because I'm recording, I'm Mr. Caesar. Do you think I can have one of your chefs to come to the studio? He used to eat the same plate of pasta every single time he used to come to
what
the restaurant.
What did he have?
Tagliolini. Tagliolini is not the spaghetti. It's like fettuccine, but very thin.
Mm-hmm.
With fried courgettes.
Ooh.
So extra virgin olive oil, garlic and fried courgettes. And that's what he used.
Every day.
Pretty much every day. So I went to the studio to cook for him for about between 4 and 5 months, something like that. And that was the story.
That's so cool. And the TV, had that been part of your plan? Like, was it something?
Never, ever I wanted to be on television.
Really?
It was my interest to be on television. I don't really watch television.
Yeah.
I never watch television. It's not the kind of thing I do.
And so when they approached you, were you sort of instantly yes or?
That day, I was supposed to have a day off.
Okay.
Something happened. I couldn't get a day off. So I had to go to the kitchen. I was in the kitchen cooking. This producer was talking with someone else. And I could see him that he was looking at me as I was cooking. The day after, he makes a phone call into the company to say, is there any chance there is a new show on Sky, on the UK TV Food, called Good Food Live with Jenny Barnett.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, there is any chance we can get this guy, the guy I saw yesterday, to come and cook Italian food? So they came to me and I went, no, listen, it's not really my stuff. I'm not really interested. Oh, come on. Can you do it? Anyway, after a lot of come on. I did it a week later, or 3-4 days later. And then it's one show. And then it was another show. And then another show. Then I got approached by Ready Steady Cook.
Yes.
The BBC. They came around to say, why don't you come to Ready Steady Cook? And then from there is endless cooking shows.
That's amazing. Because, yeah, Ready, Steady, Cook. I think that's a show that actually taught a lot of people how to cook. It was sort of a phenomenon, wasn't
it? Yes. I mean, that was the time when James Martin was there.
Yeah.
Brian Turner were there. Anthony Ward Thompson. Of course, Ainsley Harris was the presenter then. Loads of people. That,
Sally Salt, Percy Pepper.
Yeah, all of that.
Right, we're on to possibly the most important question of the day. That is your favorite sandwich.
That is the most important question of the day?
It is to me, Gino.
Okay. I don't really make myself sandwiches. I'm going to be honest with you.
That's okay.
When you say sandwiches, I'm allowed to say panino?
Yes, of course.
Panino good, right?
Yeah.
That will be a panino with mortadella.
Ooh. Good.
Not the mortadella you get here, though.
Okay.
The one in the packets.
Yeah, it's very
different. You need to go to a proper Italian delicatessen where you get a proper mortadella, and I will have a ciabatta bread with 5 or 6 slices of mortadella, and that is by far, by miles, the best sandwich ever.
Yeah.
Yes.
That sounds really good. So I've heard you say that the only other careers you considered were medicine and dentistry, but mainly because you got to wear a white coat. But then you realized that you had to study really hard to be successful in those, and that in cooking, you also get to wear a white jacket. But I wanted to know, did you seriously consider being a doctor?
I went to school to be a doctor.
You did?
The reason why I started my catering college at 15 and not at 14 when you're supposed to start, because my father forced me to go to become a doctor.
Ah, I see.
It's called Liceo Scientifico in Italian.
Okay.
Become like a doctor scientist. What he didn't know is that I don't do schools.
Okay.
I don't like reading. I don't like to be forced to learn something. I have to like something to be able to learn it.
Yeah.
And that was the time, as we said before, it was very disappointing for him to find out that. Can you imagine for a father to say his son is not want to be a doctor anymore, but he wants to be a cook? Well, you should have seen his face.
That is interesting, because it was his, was it his dad that was?
No. It was my mother's.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
You should have seen his face.
No.
May as well have told him, I don't know, what's the worst thing a son can tell to a father? Whatever is the worst thing, that was his face.
But look at you now.
Yes. Well, I remember when he saw me the first time on television, or I opened the first restaurant, he then went, you are right.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. And it's not strictly true to say that you didn't have a plan B, because I found an interview where you said that you like to write songs. Is that true?
Yes.
Are you solely a songwriter, or are you also a singer?
No, I like to write songs and write music. Okay. I've been playing the guitar for a long time, 20 years.
Okay.
And I've been writing songs for a long time. I've actually recorded some songs.
Have they been released?
No. I record them for my to see what it sounds like. Mainly for my wife. She listens to my song in the car.
Oh, that's so nice.
She's the only one.
Well, can the public expect that anytime soon?
It's a very difficult thing to get my head around, because what I don't want to happen, I fear that people will not give me a chance.
Do you think?
Yes. I fear that people will not put the two things together, or they're going to say, oh, what's happened now? All of a sudden, wants to be a rock star.
No, I don't know. But I do agree that I think people quite like being able to categorize people, so they know what you do. And so if you suddenly then come out and say, oh, but actually I also like doing this. But I think that would, I know, people would love it.
I know, but it's a very difficult thing to get your head around.
Oh, I feel excited.
You know, nowadays you can see a lot of singers. I mean, look at Lady Gaga, amazing movie that she just done.
Yes.
You know, but you need to prove yourself. You really need to. I don't know. Maybe I'm scared.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where the problem is.
But it is scary doing anything new.
Yeah. Maybe I'm scared that I will get criticized and people will tell me I'm not good enough. Nobody wants to be told that they're not good enough to do something.
Yeah.
You know, we all want to be supported by other people. But listen, one day, maybe.
Okay.
One day, maybe.
Okay, yeah. Exciting. And so, Gino, it's been really interesting reading about your career, because for all the highs, of which there have been so many that we haven't even touched upon all the things that you've done, there have been some lows. And from everything I've read, do you feel in a strange way those low times were actually the making of you?
The low times are very important in everybody's life,
yeah,
in everybody's career. You need to have the low times to appreciate the high times.
Yeah.
The secret there is learning from the low times.
Yeah.
And accepting the fact that that was bad. You were in a bad time of your life. You did something bad. Learn from it and become a better person. Have I got any regrets of my low times? No. Absolutely no. Regrets is for...
They're pointless.
It's pointless.
Yeah.
Seriously pointless having regrets. If you learn something out of it, it's all good. It's all part of life.
Yeah. Also, I really like the way you sort of, you talk about everything and it's all out in the open. And I think that's also probably an important part of learning from it. And it's sort of, you're not defined.
I wish
by...
I could talk more about the low times. The reason why I don't do that is because what I don't want it to happen is to glorify something that is bad.
Yeah.
Because when you then you are in a position like mine, where you then become successful, what I don't want it to happen is that someone who's listening to my low time, they think, oh, well, if he got away with it, or if he did that, but then he became, oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
And the problem I have is I need to find, I really needed someone like you on the other side. I can see you clever. You know what you're doing and you know, you've done your research well. I need someone clever on the other side who's not going to glorify something that is bad. So that is a very delicate...
Yeah, it's a fine line.
It's definitely a fine line.
Well, yeah, everything I've read, I don't feel like that's the message at all. I think it just comes across in such a good way.
But this is why whenever I see an interview about me, about anything, even if I'm promoting a show or a book, somehow this new journalist, which I don't think journalist is the right word, this new column fillers.
Yeah.
So you are a journalist. You've done yours. You know what you're doing. This column filler, the only thing that they do is they mention the low time without any consideration.
Yeah.
They just do it for the sake of it.
No, it's really irresponsible.
Very irresponsible way to do it. Because if a teenager picks it up and read it, they need to understand what it's all about. But they just do it because really, they're not really doing their job. They're idiots. So it's like, yet again, another one.
Let's talk about the next desert island dish. And that's the dish that you eat the most often.
Pasta.
I've heard you say that you could have pasta for breakfast, lunch and supper.
Yes.
Yeah, me too. Have you ever had it for breakfast?
Yes, I had pasta for breakfast. Yeah, not today, but I had pasta for, yeah. If
it's
there is
a
leftover penne alla bolognese.
Ooh, is that your go-to?
I go to, yeah. I warm them up with a touch of extra virgin olive oil, a bit of parmesan, 8:30 in the morning. Oh, yes.
You are talking my language.
Listen, same way you guys have a bacon sandwich of sausage and beans, I'll have a pasta.
I think we should make this like more of a thing. Let's like really bring pasta as a breakfast.
A breakfast.
Yeah.
I like that. I like
Let's do
that.
It.
A breakfast pasta. I'm going to design that.
Okay.
I'm going to design
that.
You
can call it the Margie.
The Margie, yeah. Although saying that, if you have a spaghetti carbonara, you would call it that a breakfast pasta because it's got eggs, it's got pancetta.
That is very true.
It's got cheese. Yeah, yes. That could be... The Margie spaghetti.
I like it.
All right.
Okay. As already mentioned, you currently have three different shows on television at the moment alone, which some might say is a bit greedy, Gino. But one of them, of course, is the incredibly successful series, Gino's Italian Adriatic Escape. And that must have been so fun to do. Tell us a little bit about the filming process.
Filming process. The thing that I get asked most of the time is, oh, did you really work or you go there for holiday?
Oh.
Which is really annoying.
Yeah, it's full on.
I mean, people do not realize that half an hour of television that I do, how long does it take to film? The traveling between one location and another, getting all the kids together, going on location, there is always a problem when you go on location. You know, it's raining or the guy's not there or the restaurant is shut or it's very windy, you can't cook. There is always something going on when you where you're out of the studio. Wonderful job. I love to do my job, but it's hard work.
Yeah.
It's 10, 12 hours a day. Most of the time we do it in the summer, and in Italy it's very hot.
Yeah.
So you can imagine when you see me walking around those beautiful cities, 45 degrees.
Oh my goodness.
And I've probably done 10 times that walk.
Well, I think...
Oh, there are worse jobs, yeah, by the way. I'm not saying that this is a...
No, but what I was going to say is if people think it's easy, that means you're making it look easy, and that's always a good sign, isn't it?
Well, my job is to make sure that it looks easy.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you on the other end, when you watch me cooking, you think, no way, yeah. I'm going to do that.
I'm going to do that. And you are from the west coast of Italy, but you say in this new book that you feel like the eastern regions of Italy get overlooked. Why do you think that is?
The Adriatic coast of Italy has only become popular as far as non-Italian is concerned.
Yeah.
In the last 10 years.
Okay.
The reason why we started to get a lot of interest from the Croatian coast. Have you realized in the last 10 years, everybody's talking about going to Croatia?
Yeah.
The Croatian coast. Obviously, the Croatian coast is opposite the Italian Adriatic coast. Mm-hmm. Italian people that go there to holiday on the Adriatic, they don't go to the Mediterranean. Okay. The Mediterranean is for tourists.
Okay, that's
Sorrento,
interesting.
Amalfi, Capri, the island of Sardinia, Sicily, and all of that. A true Italian will go to Adriatic because they know they're not going to find the tourists.
Yeah, the best kept secret.
So that was my aim, to show something different.
Yeah, and you must have some amazing stories from all of your travels. I heard a rumor that the crew don't always include you on boozy nights as they want you to be in tip-top form for filming the next day. Is that right?
Yeah, I was banned to go out with the crew.
Oh, no.
The thing is, when I go out, I go out. So when I go out, I go out and I order a bottle of tequila, four or five bottle of wine.
Okay.
So when I'm out, I'm out. I cannot do out, half out, like many people do.
It's all or nothing.
It's all or nothing. So I got banned by ITV production to take the crew out.
Okay.
I can only do that when the day after is a day off.
Yeah. And this is, I think you said, your 16th cookbook, which is pretty impressive. Yes. How was the writing of this one compared to ones
easier?
Before? Easier.
Easier because we were talking a subject that I never talked before, the Adriatic coast.
So it's kind of fun. Were you discovering stuff as...
Oh, wow. As I was going around, I was discovering new things. I was thinking, this is great. I can write a lot about this. This is probably the easiest book that I wrote in the last 5 or 6 years.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And you're obviously a very busy man. You do a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And yet rumor has it that you have an afternoon nap every day. Is that true?
Yes, every day. Have you been talking to my wife seriously?
I mean, I love that. I think that's going to be like one of my life goals. But how do you fit that in?
I sleep in the afternoon every single day of my life.
Okay. And how long is this nap?
It could be from, usually it's about an hour.
Nice.
And it can go like yesterday, I had 2 hours.
Oh,
because,
nice.
You know, one thing I have also is a wife that reminds me every single time I go for a nap that I have time to go for a nap.
Okay.
Right? I stay up very late at night. You know, when you have children, I got 3 children. When you go, it's a busy family. Children, then I go restaurants, and then I write books, and then I have to do interview, and then I have to go to the television, yeah. And then a friend pop in, and then a problem comes up, and then I buy something that goes, you know, there is always something going on. For me, the best time of the day is nighttime.
Okay, that's when you're most productive.
Nighttime, I mean, after 11 o'clock at night.
Best.
The kids are in bed, the phone doesn't ring anymore. My wife, she's probably doing something somewhere. I play Sudoku or watching a series. I don't watch television.
Okay.
So there's one thing that my wife and I would never do together is watch television. So that's her time when she goes upstairs to watch television. And I hate going to bed and watching television. So I go to bed to sleep.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So most of the time I'm on my own between 11 and 2 o'clock in the morning. So because I go to bed quite late in the afternoon, about 2 o'clock, I'll go off for a nap.
That sounds amazing. Let's talk about the 6th desert island dish, and that's your go-to dinner party dish.
Oh, usually something that goes in the oven.
Okay.
I don't make my life difficult. When I have people around, I like to enjoy the company.
Yeah. So
like
what might that be?
Usually I will make things like osso buco, the bilshang, because I can prepare it. I can cook it in the morning. Osso buco needs to be rested and then needs to be reheated. Brilliant. Or things like lasagne, So you cook them in the morning, resting, reheated. Fantastic. Anything that requires a reheating, that is what I do.
Yeah. And would you make a pudding?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I have to say, I would make a tiramisu or I'll make whatever they want. Depend on who is the guest.
What do you think the secret is to a really great tiramisu?
Instead of using Marsala wine, use amaretto liqueur. Much better.
Good tip. Okay. And we have a cookbook corner on Desert Island Dishes, sort of like a cookbook hall of fame.
Oh, yeah.
In your collection, which is your favorite cookbook?
I do not have a collection of cookbooks.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
I don't.
So the only ones on your shelves, your own.
Is mine.
Is that really true?
It's 100% true. I am not ashamed to say so.
No, it's not a shame.
That the only cookbooks that you will find on the shelves in my kitchen or in my office are mine. The reason is this. My wife likes to try every single recipe that I do because then she can tell me if I did well or if I did it wrong.
Okay.
So it's an opportunity for her sometime to pick up a book and try a recipe. I do have a book, which is not a cookbook. It's a collection of recipes that my grandfather left me.
Oh, amazing.
Hand notes. And that is the one I go back if I got a question about something.
Oh, what an amazing thing to have.
I know, but unfortunately, it's not big enough to answer all the questions I have. So okay. It's a limited.
But still so special.
Incredible.
We're on to the final desert island dish. And that's the last dish you would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island.
Do we ever know where this desert island is?
Who knows?
Don't know where it is?
No, just the middle
of the... And I'm on my own?
You're on your own.
Okay. I would go for, as an antipasti, as a starter, I would go for a selection of hams and cheeses.
Yeah.
You can't get it wrong.
No.
I mean, you know, beautiful Italian antipasti, fresh bread. That doesn't beat, nothing beats that. Then I would have my spaghetti vongole. Come on, you're going to have to give me my spaghetti
Of course, right? Yeah.
I'm allowed to do
Definitely.
That?
Definitely.
Okay. After my spaghetti vongole, I would go for a selection of seafood, lobster, mussels, large prawns in garlic oil, all stuff like that.
Yeah, that's
so all things I don't eat often enough, but I love scallops, all that. I probably can skip desserts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you don't feel obliged to skip it.
Can I skip desserts or do I have to?
No, you can, whatever.
I would probably have a beautiful one or two cheeses.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Like a bit of pecorino cheese or something like that. And coffee.
Very nice.
I need to have an espresso after I eat,
a proper Italian.
Oh, proper Italian espresso. Yes.
Okay. Well, that sounds delicious. Thank you so much, Gino. Those were your desert island dishes.
Thank you.
Pasta for breakfast is going to be big. And as Gino said, how is it any different to a bacon sandwich? Watch this space. If you're listening and you haven't yet left a review, please do, as it really does give the show a little boost and is very much appreciated. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to go to the website, desertislanddishes.co, for the full list of episodes, plus the recipes I've created inspired by each episode. And there's loads more beside that. Come and say hi on Instagram at Margie Nomura and tell all your friends. The more, the merrier. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage.
Plus, your super light and ultra durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.